Hello everyone and welcome back to the channel. Today we are looking at another preview of the World Tour season and the big one, the Ronde van Vlaanderen, the Tour of Flanders 2023. And as always, I'm joined by Mr. Gregor himself, Ewan Wilson. And Ewan, this is the big one, many people's favorite race of the year.
Exactly that. It's my favorite race of the year. The Ronde van Vlaanderen, the Tour of Flanders, it's like Christmas Day. It really is everything you want from professional bike racing. It's a classic. It's a monument even. We have cobbles. We have climbs. And we might even have a sprint at the end. It really is a bit of everything.
I mean, we've been blessed with Mathieu van der Poel in the last three editions being really in there in the thick of it. But last year, we also saw the emergence of a Tour de France winner coming to the forefront as well, Tadej Pogačar. And Ewan, do you think we're going to have a very similar dynamic to what we saw last year and potentially E3 as well?
Yeah, I mean, last year's Ronde was just brilliant that we saw Pogačar for the first time at a cobble race really emerge as this front runner and someone who can take it on with ease. That in this sort of new 21st century age of having a Tour de France champion, now ex-Tour de France champion, really competing for the win at the Ronde, it's alien, but now we're sort of familiar to it with Pogačar, and it makes it very exciting to see what we're going to have with him, Van der Poel, Van Aert, other contenders as well. Yeah, it's definitely going to be a really intriguing edition with so many sort of gargantuans, galacticos of our sport.
But of course, we're going to be live on the stream of Ronde van Vlaanderen, so please join us for that. And if you haven't already, check out our podcast version as well over on the Apple Store. But without further ado, Ewan, what awaits the riders on the 2023 route for the Tour of Flanders?
Well, the Tour of Flanders 2023 will begin in Bruges. Beginning in Bruges for a couple years now, it used to be in Antwerp, but the city known for its chocolate and belfry will be hosting the kickoff this year. The course is 273 kilometers. In length, and it snakes around Flanders like a bit of spaghetti, almost. It's making its way around the region. The first 100 kilometers are a little bit sort of unremarkable. We go towards the French border a little bit, passing by some sort of cycling towns such as Harderbeke and Kuurne that we know for other reasons. However, at 136k to go, which is almost the exact halfway marker in this race, we have the Alto Quadamont for the first time on this route. From there, the real sort of entry race to this Ronde van Vlaanderen will begin at 136k to go. After that, we have the Kortaker, Eikenberg, Hollerweg, Wolfenberg. Plenty of these climbs will ring bells. Or towards we get to the Canariberg, which will be sort of where the race will get sort of heated. We've seen the Canariberg light up the race in the past. That will come at 70k to go. From there, we then transition to the double billing that will mark this Ronde van Vlaanderen, the Oude Quaremont and the Paterberg. These two climbs have been used since 2012 on numerous occasions, and they will also feature again in this race. However, at 54k to go, we will have the first chance to see them both take place in this race together. After the Paterberg, we then roll onto the Koppenberg, a very steep climb, 20% or so in gradient. The cobbles, they are nasty there. It will also get narrow and into sort of some wooded area. That'll come at 44k to go. After that, we have the Marieboerstraat, then to the Steenberg Dries, the Stationsberg, the Taienberg, the former sort of climb of Tom Boonen back in the day, the Kruisberg, and finally our double billing of the Oude Quaremont and the Paterberg for the final time at 16k to go. Once we crest the Paterberg, we then dive down onto flat road, all the way to Oudenaarde, to crown our champion of, wait for it, the Ronde van Vlaanderen 2023. There we go, repping the Belgian colors today. Will it be a Belgian? It could be. Van Aert, maybe even Mathieu van der Poel. He was born in Belgium after all.
Thanks for that shirt reveal, Ewan.
But what can I say? It's a wardrobe malfunction.
But we might as well start with the man you just mentioned. The man, if he does win here, he would join a very elite club of three victories to his name, surpassing his father, etc., who only won it once. But he would join Tom Boonen, Fabian Cancellara, etc. Mathieu van der Poel, how do you feel about the Dutchman's chances? He won Milan-San Remo earlier in the month, and he's looking like he's very strong despite what happened at E3.
I mean, We say that. He still finished in second place at Adrie Heilbecker. So it's still a really strong result. And he was beaten by Van Aert after a sprint. And it was relatively close. He wasn't in a favorable position for the sprint as well. Let's point that out. He has been looking very good this year with his win at Milano-San Remo in such emphatic style. And he's also working really well with his new teammate, Søren Carl Andersen. I think that also should be pointed out. He will be here as well. They have been looking good at San Remo. They also looked very good at Adrie Heilbecker. It was Carl Andersen and his teammates that really made the big sort of selection for Van Aert and Pogacar to join Van der Poel. What I also sort of gravitate towards Van der Poel is that he is a big occasion rider. He performs so well on these big stages. San Remo was a great example of that earlier this year already. And we've seen it already in the past at the Ronde van Vlaanderen on two separate occasions in 2020 and 2022, where he came in as a favorite and he delivered on that reputation. He seems to be able to just slip it into the extra gear at these top races more than anybody else in the pro peloton, maybe Pogacar. But it really is a quality of his. And in Ronde van Vlaanderen, it makes so much sense for him to sort of be classed as the number one favorite. He has ridden incredibly well here in the past. In his first ever monument, the 2019 Ronde van Vlaanderen, he finished in fourth place. I will remind you, he crashed at about, 50, 60K to go when he had one arm up. He was like, he was riding, came down, and it looked pretty nasty. He was like lying on the ground for a while. He got back up and boom, he came in fourth place. Who'd have thought? Then a year later with the COVID edition in the autumn time, he won that race 2021. He finished in second place, being outsprinted by Casper Asgreen. And then last year he won it after outsprinting that group of four riders. So he has an incredible record here. He's never finished outside the top four. And every time he stayed upright on his bike, he's finished in the top two positions of the Ronde. So I think he's nailed on for that.
Yeah, it definitely will be very exciting to see Mathieu van der Poel if he can actually do it. And I mean, when's the last time we had someone win the Ronde van Vlaanderen and Milan-San Remo in the same year? So after a bit of time of looking, yeah, of course, it is the man himself, the Cannibal, in 1975. And Ewan, I mean, if any man is going to do it after winning Milan-San Remo, I think Mathieu van der Poel is everyone's best bet at this.
Yeah, I mean, of course, it's going to be Maddox. If it's any record, it is going to be him. But also, there have been plenty of other people who have done them both, just in separate years of their careers. Even recently, Alexander Kristoff has done it. But there's plenty of other Dutch people. Henny Kuiper, who was the last San Remo winner before Van der Poel, he won them both, as did Jan Raas. So there are other people who have done this feat. So I would be sort of shocked if he were to do it here. And if there is anybody in this race who I think has it in him to sort of rise to the occasion, it would be Mathieu.
But I mean, moving on, we've both talked too much about Mathieu van der Poel, but we can't say Mathieu van der Poel without saying Wout van Aert, who is very high on his confidence juices after winning E3 and basically winning Gent Wevelgem as well, giving it to his teammate Laporte. And that might serve him quite well in this race and Paris-Roubaix. But Ewan, they've won all the big classics, apart from Depan, where they came second, but they didn't have their A team there. They won Kern-Brussel-Kern, they won Omloop, they won Gent Wevelgem, they won E3. Yeah, second in Depan. So it's quite an impressive record from the team.
But then last year, they won Omloop, they won E3, almost won Gent Wevelgem with Laporte. It's quite similar. Yes, this year I think it's more... Is it more dominant? E3, wasn't an excellent Jumbo-Visma affair? Let's sort of remind ourselves. Yeah, I mean, it was still good. It's Jumbo-Visma after all. But it wasn't like the sort of dominance that the AI-generated 3D-printed tactics that we're so used to seeing for Jumbo-Visma, where Laporte, Van Hooydonk, or whoever it is, attacks away with Van Aert and it's all done. And the thing is, they pulled off this tactic at a number of races. Thijs Benoot kind of did it at Omloop en Nieuwsblad in 2022, but also happened at Adrie Heilbecker last year, and this year Gent Wevelgem. There is a bit of a parallel between all these. There was no Mathieu van der Poel racing in those. We spoke about it off air. Like, would this trick work if we had a Pogacar, if we had a Van der Poel really reacting to these big sort of Jumbo-Visma meteorite attacks where they go onto the front with their two top riders and they seem to ride away? At a sort of Gent Wevelgem, maybe the teams aren't on sort of full attention mode. It was also poor weather, that they might not have their A-list team fielded. Some might have just had Adrie Heilbecker, some might be in Catalonia. This race, the Ronde van Vlaanderen, they will have all of their best classics riders here, and every team will be on their best watch to try to get a good result in this race. No one targets winning Gent Wevelgem. Everyone in the classics field will be targeting the Ronde van Vlaanderen. So I'm a little bit skeptical to say that like Jumbo-Visma can just attack away with Laporte, Van Hooydonk, or whoever, and solo this all the way to the end with Wout van Aert. I think he'll have to work for this, which does make me somewhat skeptical, because with the recent exception of Adrie Heidelbecker, he doesn't really sort of rise to the occasion at these top level monument races as much as a Van der Poel, as much as a Pogacar. Wout has started 14 monuments, by the way, and he's only won one, but he has a great conversion rate in the podium finishes. He's podiumed just under half of the monuments that he has entered, 6 out of the 14. So he has a very, very good podiuming record, but winning seems to be that extra stretch. And he has entered almost every one of his monuments as a favorite.
Yeah, that is a very good point. Kind of chokes quite a bit in literally. Sure. But yeah, he kind of chokes quite a bit in these big occasions, like we've said. But
and I mean, yeah. I've got more stats here.
the Wout bashing. It's like I've you were hiding this. Down. You were hiding this. And saying it in a Belgian kit. That's quite funny.
I know. Well, Wout's uncle did ride for the Netherlands. Nevertheless, I digress. Looking towards his results since Ronde van Vlaanderen last year, at sort of being in a small reduced bunch sprint, either for the win or for second place. That's important here. So he did Roubaix last year. He beat Stefan Kung for second place. Yes, he won that one. But after that, it goes downhill very quickly. Liège-Bastogne-Liège, he lost a sprint to Quinten Hermans there. Also going deeper into the season, we have Quebec. He lost a sprint to both Binyam Girmay and Michael Matthews for second place behind Cosnefroy. At Montreal, he lost a reduced bunch sprint to Pogacar for the win there. Then also looking towards... Oh, you must also factor in he won a sort of reduced bunch sprint at Bretagne ahead of Axel Laurence in 2022. Okay, a win, but that was also followed by a poor performance at the World Championships where he was beaten by Christophe Laporte and Michael Matthews in a sprint. The Bamer Classic, he was beaten by Marco Haller in a reduced bunch sprint. And now coming into 2023, he was beaten by Pippo Ganna recently in San Remo in a reduced bunch sprint. He won Adrie the other week, but I'm not sure if you're keeping count of that. That is 3 occasions out of 9. That's a 33% conversion rate on reduced bunch sprints at the World Tour or World Championship level. That's not filling me with confidence.
I'm surprised you didn't mention the Amstel Gold where he nearly lost to Pidcock.
That was in 2021.
Okay.
I was looking at results in the past year.
Fair enough. But yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. But Ewan, we haven't really had like a situation in the Tour of Flanders where teammates have been then the finale, really, when you think back to the Tom Boonen days, to some respect, the Philippe Gilbert had his teammates down the road, and that was the big era of Quickstep. But I can't think of a point where a teammate has been the pivotal role in a Tour of Flanders finale. It's not like, are we going to see Laporte with Wout van Aert, Tadej Pogacar, and Mathieu van der Poel, and Laporte is going to be the factor that separates these three guys? I don't think so.
The likelihood is there. But I think Ronda's too hard. I think Laporte maybe would get ground down by Mathieu, Pogacar, and Wout. And I'm expecting those three to ride this one out. Jumbo, I think we kind of saw it at Adrie. Once these three guys are ahead, there's no one really coming near them. So maybe teammates kind of get reduced, their influence gets reduced there. Also looking at recent victories, ever since the COVID era, well, the COVID break in 2020, we haven't had a solo victor. So if Wout is expecting to do a team time trial with Christophe Laporte and Nathan van Hooydonk to go out all the way to the end solo, I think we can look past that. The solo victories we had were before the COVID break. And I think there's been such a big paradigm shift in cycling that has altered tactics in the way in which this race is competed. So it's not sounding so confident, but I think Wout should probably be up there in the mix, at least. And if he's not, then what? Laporte, come on. He's got to be a top five contender.
I mean, we haven't made a video about that or anything, but I think Laporte was probably the signing of the season last year. Yeah, nevertheless, Ewan, we've mentioned him so many times already. Tadej Pogacar, we almost don't need to talk about him because he's been in every single conversation already. But Tadej Pogacar, his second ever Ronde van Vlaanderen, looked very strong at E3. He's got more experience now riding these roads. And how do you see his form, his chances for this monument?
I think Pogacar's got a really good chance here. Definitely to get a podium. I'm not quite sure about victory. As I mentioned, we haven't had a solo victor since 2020. We haven't had a solo victor since 2019. Ever since then, I think Pogacar was not really a household name back when Betiol won the race in 2019. Now he's sort of a Galactico, almost the most intergalactic of the Galacticos in the sport. So it definitely points towards success for Pogacar, but that just visualizing the win is getting hard. He tried so hard at Adri to get rid of the others, and it didn't work there. He was riding really, really well at the Ronde last year, almost dropped Mathieu van der Poel at points. Van der Poel was even said in his post-race interviews that it was hard to keep up with Pogacar, but the crucial thing there is that he never dropped him. It doesn't fill me with 100% confidence that he's going to be able to completely drop them at the Eau de Quatremont, at the Paterberg. They're steep climbs, but I don't think they're quite sort of long enough for Pogacar to go into his element. We even saw it recently at San Remo, once van der Poel puts on that big afterburner attack, Pogacar finds it difficult to follow. Wout will as well. So it definitely points towards a podium. Pogacar's a good solid sprinter as well. So if he's up against sort of second tier favorites, like maybe a Matej Mohoric or Alberto Bettiol, Seb van Marke, I think he'll be able to beat them in a reduced bunch sprint. But I think the win might just be a little bit too far. There's probably maybe a 10% chance of Pogacar victory, I'd say.
I mean, if any statistic nerds are, well, I'm one, Ewan's one, but like in terms of last winner who's actually won a Grand Tour and then adds this to the palmares, it's Gianni Bugno back in the 90s. And before that, yeah, you've guessed it, it's Eddie Merckx again. So
yeah, but even in recent times, I think we've seen some Grand Tour contenders rise
but never win it
really well. Yeah, exactly, never win it. But Pogacar came very close last year.
Yeah, okay. Outside of Pogacar, but
yeah, but like Nibali, Roglic,
did he? He had one good attack.
They finished in top 10.
Yeah, but he's never won a Tour de France.
True.
Yeah, only that World Tour in 2009.
Yeah, he was never a sort of Grand Tour gargantuan.
But Valverde aside, who thought we would be mentioning Valverde in a Tour of Flanders preview? But you and Quickstep, we have to go there. Soudal Quickstep, we kind of, I think your face says it all.
I wasn't 100% expecting you to bring up Quickstep, so I have no notes.
I feel like we should, because it's the Belgian team. It's a Belgian monument. Kasper Asgreen, former winner, but they've been absolutely terrible. There's no Remco Evenepoel on the start list, even though there was rumors that he was going to go, but no world champion here.
Almost, if Remco was here, it would have been much more of a spectacle for us to talk about. It's good to see Alaphilippe come back to the Koppel Classics, though. He said early on in the season, back in January, that the Ronde was one of his big targets here. And with his good friend Kasper Asgreen, a former winner of this race, I think they could do quite well as a sort of double act. But Asgreen has not been filling me with any confidence at all in 2023, and also for the most part of 2022. Alaphilippe, I think, is just missing that flair, but you also don't know when he's going to bring out the flair. 2020 World Championships and the 2021 World Championships, we weren't expecting anything. Even the Tour de France stage that finished at the Côte de la Fosse au Loup, we weren't expecting Alaphilippe to sort of appear, but he did. A bit like Van der Poel, he is a big occasion rider, rides very well at these sort of top tier blue ribbon races, but based on recent form, he's not lighting my fire. No one in this team is lighting my fire, to be honest, Scott. I think, I'm very uninspired by Soudal. They didn't bring much to the table last year, and I'm not expecting them to bring anything to the table here. Yes, they're a Flemish team who've done well in this race in the past, but they've won so many Koppel Classics, and they've been so vapid in every single one this year and last year.
But Ewan, we won't dwell too much on Quickstep. I mean, it would be rude not to go there. Binyam Girmay won Get Wild Game last year, but he's not been looking great. It's going to be his first ever Tour of Flanders. He's done Milan-San Remo twice, but never Tour of Flanders. Get Wild Game, I don't know if it's fair to judge him because it was a terrible day. I don't know what the weather forecast is for the Tour of Flanders. We should probably look it up, but
It might be raining.
Yeah, so I feel like he just needs to develop. I think this is his kind of learning years in terms of the big races like this. And then we all know that their big goal isn't really this for Bini. It is Tour de France.
Yeah, it feels like last year was sort of discovery, but at an unprecedented maverick level. This year, he's been sent to World Tour races, and he's actually riding a lot of the big tier classics. It's not quite as successful as last year, but I mean, it can't be golden all the time. He's going to come back. It's a matter of when. I don't quite think it's going to be the Ronde, I'm afraid. I'm worried for Antimarché's chances. If Binny were at the level he was at last year with Wavelheim and Adrie, then I probably would have said, yes, he would be a favorite, but he's not at that level this year. We have a strong, sort of fairly strong, but not crazy informed squad. Taco van der Hoorn, it's not quite so great on these hillier profiles. Mike Tennyson looked decent against Wavelheim, but Yeah, and similarly, Adrien Petit looked great last year, but this year, just not quite on the same level. So I think Intermarché just sort of look past this and get ready for Paris-Roubaix, because they have a couple of decent riders for that.
But Ewan, we can't not talk about the French team. You're such a big fan of Valentin Madouas, third place last year. Stefan Kung as well, such a formidable unit. They've really snuck under the radar, kind of developed into this really strong classics team. Everyone was looking toward Demare potentially be a winner of this race. But yeah, here we are now with Valentin Madouas and Stefan Kung potentially leading the race or leading the team in this race.
Yeah, Groupama have been really good in the classics over the past 2 years, but Stefan Kung hasn't looked amazing recently. He finished sixth the other week at Adrie Saxo Bank Classic. So evidently he's got decent legs, but it's not like last year where it felt like Stefan Kung had such good momentum coming into these spring classics and that he was almost a nail on for the podium. I don't think we're quite seeing that this season from Stefan Kung, but Valentin Madouas is riding really, really well. He's very race savvy. He's already performed particularly well with his podium finish at Strada Bianca, and he rode well in this race last year. I think he is still a little bit overlooked as a rider, even though he's got so many good results to his name. When he attacks, he isn't quite marked as much as sort of these other contenders should be. So he might benefit from that this year, being a little bit more of an sort of underrated presence. But the two British riders, I'm very intrigued to see how they will perform here in Lewis Askey and Sam Watson. Sam Watson, who's been riding really, really well in the past month in the Belgian Classics and at GP Denain in France. So they evidently have good legs. I'm not suggesting that they're going to get a big victory here or a podium, but I think maybe a lower rank top 10 or top 15 would be a brilliant result for Sam Watson and his sort of announcement on the top level. We've had a couple of sort of young gun performances at the Ronde in the past. That's where Mads Pedersen first jumped into our minds, Casper Asgreen as well. Even sort of Fred Wright last year had a really good race. So I wouldn't be shocked. Hell, Tiesj van Hoogedorp back in the day, this is where he blew up. And look at him now. Sam Watson, that's all I'm saying. I think he might do the same.
But before we get to our favorite part of the show, just some outsiders to flag up. There are plenty of former champions in this race. Matej Morahage, not one of them, but interesting rider. Just always good on any terrain in Belgium. Alberto Bettiol, former winner. You've also got, there we go.
There we go. Right to the camera.
Peter Sagan as well, leading his team, potentially could do something there. Anthony Tucci is a very strong rider in that team as well. But Alexander Kristoff leading the Uno X team, which should be quite exciting to see if they can actually do something. Hopefully, who knows, probably not on this course. Michael Matthews as well. We haven't really spoken about them today, but the Lotto Destiny squad, even though they're Pro Continental now, have looked like a completely different team. And we'll see if Frédéric Fraisson could potentially carry on his third or fourth place finishes in these races in the Belgian Classics this year. But yeah, Ewan, without further ado, who do you think is going to be winning the 2023 edition of Tour of Flanders?
I don't think I've ever been more certain of a podium in one of these previews before, which may make me seem like a mug when we look back on these in a couple of months' time. But I'm going to say Tadej Pogacar finishes in third place at the Ronde van Vlaanderen because he will lose out in a sprint between Wout van Aert and Mathieu van der Poel, and it will go that way. Wout van Aert will finish in second place, and Mathieu van der Poel will win his third Ronde van Vlaanderen. There is no one better in this race in the world right now. There's no one better at Monument Racing than Mathieu van der Poel right now. I think it points towards a big win for him. As long as sort of tactically, I think Mathieu needs to slow down the group before the sprints. They need to get a big enough gap, because where we've seen Mathieu really benefit against Wout van Aert is when the sprint is slower. So when they come at a smaller speed, because that's when Mathieu can really use his acceleration against Wout. And that is what Mathieu has better than Wout van Aert. And I think we're going to see that again this year.
So, I mean, I'm still living high on my 2020 prediction. Don't worry, that's going to be wrong this year, because I'm basing my prediction on the Cycling Dane gaming video where we simulated Pogacar 100 times in this race. And I'm going to say Pogacar is going to win this race. Second place is going to be Casper Asgreen, and third place, Mads Pedersen. Check out the video. It's a good video. But anyways, that's it for this video. Or if you're checking out on the podcast as well, make sure to comment down below who you think is going to win Ronde van Vlaanderen 2023. And of course, check out www.thecyclingdane.com for our in-depth preview as well. by Ewan as well. So with that, hit the like button, subscribe to the channel, and we will see you on Sunday on the live stream. And of course, as always, thank you for watching and have a nice day.